Hello, friends. It's your Chapo for this week. It's me, Will Menaker. Joining me, as always, Matt Christman.
Hi.
Felix Biederman.
Hello, everyone.
And Virgil Texas.
Hi, hello.
Before we start the show, just a little brief house cleaning on an issue that I know you guys are interested in. I'm talking about merch. And if you're listening to this right now, I'm going to let you know that you will be given a special opportunity in the show information of this very episode you're listening to purchase the latest run of Chapo Trap House t-shirts. We did it last time for the election show. A lot of people were, where's my t-shirt? There just weren't enough. Now is your opportunity to get more t-shirts. Also, sitting in, joining us in the Trap House Mansion, Tim Heidecker. Tim, how's
it
going?
Good afternoon. Good to be here in the flesh.
Welcome to New York, New York. The city so nice. Brooklyn, New York. They named the city so nice, they named it Brooklyn, New York.
The city that never fucks.
He's got that classic slice. That's because he knows how to do it when he comes to New York.
I stopped by an old haunt in the Williamsburg district for an eggplant slice.
Oh,
I requested the eggplant slice, which I used to get when I lived here years ago. And it was not, they didn't have it. So they had made an eggplant pie. And so it took like 30 minutes for this stupid, simple slice. So that's why I'm on time. Usually I'm much earlier than I need to be.
Goddamn those simpletons who run that pizzeria. That's what gentrification is doing to you.
Papa John's.
Yeah. The one in, we're going to name them and shame them.
You are to make an extra large eggplant pie. You are to take 30 minutes. You are not to fill any other orders. I will have one slice and you will dispose of the rest.
That's right.
If I see you selling it to anyone else, I will read out your address, your parents' address, all that. Were you going to read it on the show?
I'll tell you a little small act of kindness I did. I got the Coke. While I was waiting for my slice, I get the Coke.
So fountain soda?
Fountain Coke.
Fountain Coke? Yeah. Okay.
Best kind.
Yeah, and
best
kind. I actually asked for a Diet Coke, but then she says, you say Coke? And I've made that choice. Yeah, just
go
Coke.
For it. It's fine. Okay. But, yeah. So then New York, baby.
I slurp through that Coke, and then the pizza's still not there. So when I go to get the slice, I'm like, can I get a little refill there? And she takes a pause, and then she goes, it's a dollar. And I go, that's fine. And I go to give her a dollar, but then she makes eye contact with somebody else back there, and she goes, it's okay. But then I go, it's fine. Here, it's a dollar. I'll pay. But she goes, no, no, no. And I was like, you pay for the Coke syrup, so I should pay. But she insisted. So anyways, I did my best to pay for what I got.
I mean, a classic move is to carry
slice of life stuff here.
Well, I was gonna
only
say
in New York.
Well, the classic move is to carry or with you at all times, like a generic sort of Coca-Cola fountain soda cup.
Mm-hmm.
Take it into fast food and other establishments and just get a refill. And if anyone just say, no, this is my free refill. I already paid for this.
Real cool thing to do is to go in there with your cup, but you're also wearing a GoPro, and you review soda fountains, and you get into huge involved arguments with the workers at whatever fast food place because you're like, I don't think you refilled the syrup bags on time.
Holy shit.
Can tell that it's biodegrading, and have a big YouTube channel.
I finally get like the fucking train bullshit and the elevators. Like I'm always
your soda machine.
This is stupid. Who cares? But there is such a vast difference in quality between different soda machines.
Breakthrough.
It's like some places they have too much syrup. Some places don't have enough syrup.
This was not as crisp as I like it.
It's like syrupy. There is like a platonic ideal of a fountain soda, and it varies wildly from establishment to establishment.
Your best bet's going to be the can.
Yeah, that's always going to be the quality. But like a good fountain soda is the best possible soda.
The best, yes. That's the highest
ideal. So like if you had a YouTube channel that reviewed where to get the best calibrated soda, I would watch that.
I'm not
watching the elevator
videos. That community
videos.
Absolutely exists. It's all men who look exactly like Matt. And they're sitting in these rooms decked out with, you know, like posters for Tab and all these brands that don't exist anymore. And they're just like, hey guys, Steve here. How y'all doing? So today I reviewed the soda machine at the Target down on Route 73.
Yeah, they have all of the last new Coke. They have it all in their basement.
Well, there's those great YouTube videos that, you know, guys reviewing like the cans of like spaghetti, like the, you know, the Chef Boyardee cans.
Yes, yes.
The chunky soup guy. Yeah. Those are the best. That's like a dark, dark place to go.
We have an elevator. Me and Virgil have an elevator guy we like to watch.
Diesel Ducey, check him out. He does elevators.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, most of these types of channels, like, yeah, it's like just a guy in his room talking about the can density of chunky New England clam chowder. But Diesel Ducey, there is like a very cool espionage element because he has to sneak into these construction sites to ride their elevators.
He's reviewing elevators?
Yeah. Oh, and he has a trademark. He flashes like a little toy train at the camera and he's like, Diesel Ducey here. It's like 007. Da, 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 and he's our favorite guy.
See, I thought he was Steve Ducey's son.
We could do that. We could.
I remember the one you showed me of a Diesel Ducey that I loved is that he was approaching a building and he was like, "We're coming up on the security camera that was installed because of me."
You know, he is literally changing the world. He is changing the world around him.
Oh, we should fucking get him on the show.
Yeah, Diesel Ducey coming up.
I'm staying in this super high rise in Times Square here because, you know, I'm fancy showbiz.
Times Square W?
Yeah.
The guy who makes eggplant pies for.
Yeah. What's that?
They make the eggplant pies just for you.
Just for me. But I'm up on like this 45th floor or something, and I haven't had this feeling in a while, but going that high, I felt this feeling of this could go. Like, this could snap and it would be over. Like, yeah. I had the weight of the elevator.
That's true, but if you jump at just the right
moment. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking if I just jump every second while it's going down.
You have to time it just right, though.
It's so weird. I was really thinking that in the elevator.
What is the only defense?
Well, it's not. You wouldn't die even if any of the cables snapped. And not, there are redundant cables as well. Okay. the safety locking mechanism invented by Samuel Otis, but perfected by ThyssenKrupp.
I used to, like, when I was like 14 and just from like watching like FX shows, I thought you would have sex through brooding, like just looking depressed around women. But I thought the other way to do it was to be in dangerous situations. Like when I would go into a building or a plane, I would fantasize about it crashing or falling apart and me surviving in a cool way. And thinking that women would want to fuck me after that. Yeah. Which is like, why a woman's like, oh, I saw you descend down an elevator cable and you're, yeah, you're well, a 14-year-old with a bowl cut who like just sweats
she wants to
when he
you and smother
well,
you.
Well, now that we've made our lives better, and to move on to a slightly different tack, another person who's making all of our lives better, of course, is our president. He's still in the news.
President,
you heard about
man.
This? Just a few things I wanted to bring up about that. He still has to talk about his son, and just now here, his son's in a little bit of trouble. And like any, you know, like any dad, you have to come to the defense of your kid, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like whether it's on the Little League field or on CNN. So I want to start out here, but I want to play this news clip of Trump talking about his beautiful boy.
My son is a wonderful young man. He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer.
Russian?
Not a Russian government lawyer, but a Russian lawyer.
Okay.
It was a short meeting. It was a meeting that went very, very quickly, very fast. Two other people in the room, I guess one of them left almost immediately, and the other
almost
one
immediately.
Was not really focused on the meeting. I do think this, I think from a practical standpoint, most people would have taken that meeting.
I love how he's able to achieve that tone of whatever. This is the most reasonable thing I could possibly be saying. You know, we breathe oxygen.
What I like about that is that he opens it up by saying, my son is a wonderful young man. He's 40. His son is 40 years old.
Yeah. It's like that's what you say to the principal when your kid is fought shitting in like the urinal in the fucking preschool. And it's like, he's a wonderful young man. Please let him back into your school.
I was thinking about how like Trump's move his entire life before he was president, whenever he would get in trouble, like he would break some building code or like just like call any like female celebrity ugly for no reason, he would just have his lawyer write an open letter to like the New York Post being like, Mr. Trump is actually incredibly regular and everything he just did is what a normal person would do. And now that he's president, he like can't really do that anymore, so he has to be his own advocate. But every time like something weird happens, it's always that. It's just like, I want to assure you that my son is of the most regular quality.
Well, it's like he did earlier in the when he first came into office and the Russia thing was just starting to bubble up, his big move was he was gonna like do a registered letter saying that he didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Yeah, the registered letter.
Genius.
Like, it's registered. That's like, you can't lie in a registered letter. You go to jail.
I mean, it's obviously a strategy he's used for many, many years. Yeah. Is you just never give an inch. You never acknowledge any wrongdoing. You never apologize. And what can you do with that?
That's what we do.
That's what we do. The secret to our success. Normal. Normal.
His defense of it was that it was a quick meeting. They weren't really paying attention. They didn't. They didn't even finish the little water bottles that were on the table. When I met with President...
I love the... It left almost immediately.
it's like
did
that...
Did the 360, like, came in with... Oh, yeah. See later.
But I do, like, believe him when he says that they left immediately, because it's like...
Well, if you meet Don Jr., you're like, okay, this is not...
Yeah, this is going nowhere.
This is going... Avenue.
I mean, that's what we've said, like... We think, like, yeah, obviously there's some weird shit there, but we don't think, like, the Luis Mensch thing of, like, this is a 40-year plan, and Donald Trump's a secret communist, and this is part of a 20-step plan.
Yeah.
It's like, they're very dumb people. That's, and, like, of course, if he met the lawyer, Don Jr. would just, like, he would talk about, like, how, like, Cabela's doesn't recognize his national premium card or whatever. And, yeah, of course, it would, like, kind of go nowhere, because these are incredibly dumb, distracted people, all of them.
Well, that's where I keep thinking, or my gut keeps saying, like, if this is the collusion you guys are talking about, then where is the other stuff? Because, you know, this is the meeting they took. It's the dumbest. It's Goldstone is setting it up. Like, these are the bottom of the barrel Russian types.
Can you talk about that guy? Rob Goldstone has been another a wonderful, like, sort of Zillig figure that's emerged out of this whole controversy. He's sort of like
he's basically if Fred Flintstone came to life.
He really is.
He's Fred Flintstein.
It's Fred Flintstone who came to life and went on a sex tour of the Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
But I guess they say that this could have been them sort of testing the waters to see if they'd be open to more collaboration, collusion. But so we'll see.
It's like, I mean, they're testing the waters, but it's like they went into a wading pool with floaters on and almost drowned.
Like, I mean, you like go in a room with Donald Jr. and like his mouth is open the whole time. And he's like holding a rhino dick. Like, I killed this. It's like, that's very nice. Put it away.
Yeah, no, it's like, look, if it were an important meeting, there would have been a spread. There would be food. When I met with President Xi at my golf course, I mean, when I met with the president of China. We had excellent cake.
Beautiful chocolate.
I introduced President Xi to a beverage that I invented. It's half lemonade, half iced tea. It's the most refreshing summer beverage you could have. We love it in Mar-a-Lago. It's called the Donald Trump. It's a delicious beverage. That's how we have a real meeting. There was no beverages consumed at this meeting.
Huge shout out to Mike Fossey for the Arnold Palmer joke. One of the best ever.
The other thing he said about Donald Jr. that has stuck with me is when he called him a high quality person.
High quality.
I love
person.
My limited run son.
I love my special
exclusive
child.
Son.
There's another thing that happened recently. Trump had a fairly amazing quote about this border wall.
What the fuck?
Like, those are the, because it's like, oh, get a load of this idiot. And then these quotes like that are like, oh, he could kill everyone.
Well, he's like, backing him. He's painting himself into a corner where he has to maybe up his ridiculous game every couple weeks.
Well, he has.
He's
going
to be posting pictures of his shit in his own shit in his toilet. This is what I think of CNN. People are like, okay, I guess he topped.
Oh, God. And then every shut idiot on the internet is going to do their own shit post. Be like, stand in solidarity with the president. And half of them is going to be like, there's a lot of blood in there, dude. You should go to the doctor.
Well, you have to respect Donald Trump's shits. They're very healthy looking, you know, and maybe we should be less prudish about human fecal matter.
Hey, one of them took a meeting with a Russian fucking lawyer. I mean, that's impressive.
Trump is going to do the dick print challenge. Like, he's going to be like the rapper of the game, and he's going to be wearing like his Under Armour shorts in the mirror, and you just see the outline of his dick while he's flexing. He's just going to hashtag it up like the game, and it's going to be like, young and handsome, rich, you big dick ass motherfucker. Ladies, hit me up.
You're predicting a Trump dick pic before the end of his presidency.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the only logical move. Yeah. Like, if you read Machiavelli.
Either his shit in the toilet or his penis.
Well, it's one or the other. If you read Machiavelli's The Prince.
It's basically, It all comes down to whether or not he figures out how to use the camera on his phone.
Right.
Because yeah. I don't think he can do that. I think they say the only app on his phone is Twitter.
Right.
He only knows how to do that. So he probably doesn't even know it has a camera on it.
Yeah.
If someone teaches him how to use the camera,
it's over.
It is fucking over. We're done
for. He would take so many pictures in the Oval Office.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It would be,
He'd be like one of those teens that, like, just my dad got me a new credit card. Here it is. And they post a photo.
New nuclear codes for the week.
I like when his Twitter starts sounding like a diary entries. Have you noticed that? Like, when he's going overseas, he's like, just left for Paris. Can't wait to get there and see my friend. Well, I was talking to Vic the other day, Vic Berger. And, he sent me that handshake, you know, that Macron handshake. And it dawned on me, I was like, this guy falls in love so quickly. As soon as anyone gives him any kind of attention or any kind of appreciation, he's in. He's just like all in with that person.
Well, yeah, like we're talking Xi, the president of China. He spent the entire campaign like China is the boogeyman, and he meets him once in Mar-a-Lago and they split the beautiful cake. He's like, this guy's amazing.
Yeah.
Taiwan belongs to the mainland.
Also during the campaign, he was like, Saudi Arabia did 9/11. And then he goes there and they just put on a fancy dance for him and put his big fat head on a hotel.
Well, that happened in France, too, where he's like, all during the campaign, he's like, Paris is done. It's over. There is no such thing as France anymore.
Yeah.
And then he's there. He's like, it's actually very nice. It's very.
Jim never goes, but now he's coming back, Jim. Folks. I talked to Macron and then I went and said, Jim, you got to come back to Paris. It's amazing now.
Jim, the giant Quran that wanders the streets and envelops children. It's gone. The Macron killed it.
But I do actually, if you wouldn't mind, Tim, I would like to get you to do the a reading now from. This is just Trump's actual quote here. So there's two sort of slides here. Here you go. These are Trump's comments on what's the status of his border wall.
And this was him speaking on the Air Force One to reporters.
This is part of the. He's being asked this by a journalist.
So someone says, you were joking about solar, making the border wall out of solar. Look, there's no better place for solar than the Mexican border, the southern border. And this isn't the funny part. And he says, and there's a very good chance we can do a solar wall, which would actually look good. But there is a very good chance we could do a solar wall.
DJ, run that shit back.
So he's just talking to his own brain. One of the things with the wall is you need transparency. You have to be able to see through it. In other words, if you can't see through that wall, so it could be a steel wall with openings, but you have to have openings because you have to see what's on the other side of the wall.
So
and I'll give you an example. As horrible as it sounds, when they throw the large sacks of drugs over, and if you have people on the other side of the wall, you don't see them. They hit you on the head with 60 pounds of stuff. It's over. It's over, folks. Okay? As crazy as that sounds, I'm not, it says cray in here, but that's been corrected. He didn't say cray. As crazy as that sounds, you need transparency through the wall. But we have some incredible designs.
Somebody said to me that the best way to explain that is that in some meeting about the construction of it, someone said, "Well, the project needs transparency in awarding contracts and stuff." And he said, "Yeah, you're right. It does need to be transparent."
Oh my god!
Because there's another thing he did earlier that is in that vein of him just genuinely not understanding, like misinterpreting an obvious word, even in the context. He was in the Oval Office with a reporter, and the reporter said, "You know, George W. Bush said that the Oval Office is an oval because that means there's nowhere to hide."
Great.
And he goes, "Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, you could be in the corner or something, but someone could see you out the window, I guess, but there's nobody out there." So he took him literally like, okay, could I hide in here? I was like, I could.
Under the desk.
He could not operate at the level of like of a metaphorical language. So when he heard transparency, the wall has to be transparent, he literally thought that meant you had to be able to see through it.
President Amelia Bedelia.
I've never seen him sincerely laugh. I've never seen him be able to acknowledge the concept of humor, of figurative language.
He has no abstract thought. It's kind of astounding. He doesn't have object permanence or abstract
thought. What about the remark he made to Buzz Aldrin about Infinity, right?
That was so good. That was some AJ Soprano the best thing shit.
Ever. That was like could a be. Brain
we
don't,
it was Steve Brule. It could be. We don't know. It might be. But there might be something there.
When we were watching the inauguration speech and he was like, no one could go outside in America because they'll be killed by gangs who ask them for a dollar. When they're carrying electronics back, heroes like Bernard Goetz. Like, it was like though his concept of crime, it seems like he lives in the 80s.
Yeah.
But now I don't think it's that. Like, the wall quote and all the other shit, he lives in like a zany, madcap, crime filled universe. He lives Gotham. In 1960s live action Batman.
Who's that guy? He's like, it's like the infomercials. He's like the zany
Matthew
guy.
Matthew Lesko.
Yeah, he goes, the money they don't want you to know about. Right, if you, right. I think we could start a campaign now to convince Trump that that guy is the Riddler.
Oh, absolutely.
To get the FBI.
And he's loose in Washington.
What is the name of his book? It's Free Money from the Government.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It's like, Mr. Trump, this guy is stealing from the Federal Reserve.
folks, we have bad news. The Washington Monument has been cut in half by A-10 warthogs, but the Riddler is done for.
You think that's funny, but you remember that book that was like the 100 liberals who are ruining America?
Was that, Bernard Goldberg. Yeah.
He was on that book. Matthew Lesko was on that book.
What?
Convincing really? People that oh, the government is just a source of free money. He's one of the 100 people.
Yo, dude, they are not trying to drag our man, Matthew Lesko. Hell
I've
no,
actually
dude.
Heard from people who live in the D.C. area that he wears that outfit all the time. In public.
That's so cool.
And drives a car with those with the question marks on it.
So that kicks ass.
He basically is a Batman villain.
He is a live Batman villain. And folks, we got to take care of him. He's on the list.
Why can't we nominate a guy like that? He's flamboyant. He's popular. He's good.
Free money from the government should be the future of American politics.
I like, you know, not to change the subject slightly, the Trump brain. When he's reading a speech and he decides to comment on something he's just read.
Yeah.
And I just saw he did it the other day in his weekly address, which have you noticed that they have to do the two angles because they're obviously cutting together like several takes, but maybe they've done that for other presidents, but this was like this side angle's off. Like
the glass of Coke on the desk. Like every time it comes, the level goes up and down.
But it's like Homer being interviewed.
If you know anything about filmmaking, you know, which maybe these guys don't, but like you want that side angle to be like significantly different in size. So it's not this weird, like,
right. You know,
but he'll say something like, you know, Obamacare is on the verge of collapsing. And I mean collapsing. And folks, it's collapsing. And you're like, you don't have to say that three times. You just can read the speech. You're trying to make it natural, but it's like highlighting. So it's highlighting the speech that it's being read.
He's like, whenever I listen to a lot of mixtapes, and every mixtape, whenever like the first 20 seconds of the song, they'll be like, yo, DJ, you need to run that shit back. And it'll just be like an okay punchline. Uh-huh. And that's Trump. Trump's brain is chopped and screwed.
Yeah.
He's the best. And he's going to win again. And I can't wait. Like, he is going to beat. People don't realize, like, the Democrats are going to run, like, Cory Booker and Zuckerberg. And
Zuckerberg, really?
Yeah, they're going to run both of them. Not as president and vice president, but
together.
They're going to clone them together. They're going to put them in the transporter at the same time. Yeah. And, like, yeah, look, the guy with, like, double dementia is just way more appealing than that. It's cool that he chops and screws his words because it does help people understand it.
After Trump came back from the G20, he gave that interview on, what was it, CBC, right? With that skeleton fucking 100-year-old Pat Robertson. I believe it was. It
a
was
true skeleton.
And like
someone wearing the skin of Pat Robertson.
And the money quote was him saying, yeah, you know, I just got back from the G20. There were 20 leaders there. And I was friends with all of them.
Oh, yeah.
And
I like when he goes, I think I'm friends with all. I think they're friends with me. I think I am. Sorry.
Well, Trump is not like the right wing people wanted Trump to be, you know, God Emperor. But he's not. But he's something more powerful. Trump is like all our special guy. Like, he's our son. Trump is our son who we send on birthright to be like, I had a great time. I saw the Wailing Wall. It was so important to me. I swear I'm going to go to temple now when he gets back. We send him to Saudi Arabia and be like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. You guys are so great. I'm Muslim now. We send him to G20, which was his just regular secular summer camp. And it's like, yeah, okay. People can say he does bad things, but this is like, it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to see him like go out in the world.
Trump is fun. I'm having some regrets voting for him.
not me, all the way.
Well, yeah.
I've already donated to his reelection campaign.
I don't want to belabor Trump too much. You know, he is our president, but like I said, we could have had another way. We could have gone down another path, if you will, because there were two paths set before us. There was Trump on one hand, and then there was our boy John Kasich on the other. And I'm referring, of course,
legend.
Humble Midwestern gentleman hobo.
I'm referring,
my mom. I like John Kasich. I like
him. Who could you? Look at him. Yeah, look at his face. Like
sweet pockmarked boy.
Yeah,
a little weird.
We could have had Kasich.
Yeah,
we could have had Kasich, who's a good man and not a vulgarian like Trump. Yeah,
nice guys always finish last.
And a good.
He's like Chauncey Gardner. Gardner from there or something like that.
I've actually never noticed this about the Two Paths book. On the front cover is his sort of weathered, pockmarked face. Look at the image on the back cover.
Was that Mike Pence taking a picture?
The back photo is Kasich giving a high five to a boy.
And yes, Mike Pence is taking a picture of it.
We've read from this book before. This is John Kasich's sort of post-election book called Two Paths, America Divided or United. That is really just a collection of his, you know, completely charming, rambling anecdotes. And I'd like to share now with Tim and with my co-hosts and the listeners just a few Kasich anecdotes on the show. So this one, the setup for this first one is he's talking about a campaign event where he got a chance to speak from the heart. And he says here, all this helps to set the stage for me at that very first debate where I had to fight just to be heard. When I was asked how I'd explain my opposition to same-sex marriage to a daughter who might be gay, it was my one opportunity that night to speak personally on an issue, and I grabbed at it. I said, look, I'm an old-fashioned person, and I happen to believe in traditional marriage, but the court has ruled, and we have to accept it. Just because somebody doesn't think the way I do, it doesn't mean I can't care about them or I can't love them. If one of my daughters happened to be gay, of course, I would accept her. Of course, I would love her. That's what we're taught when we have strong faith. And I've got to tell you, issues like that are planted to divide us. But let's treat everybody with respect. Let them share in the great American dream we have here in this country. I'll love my daughters no matter what they do because God gives me unconditional love. And I'm going to give it to my family and my friends and the people around me. That's nice. And then the parentheses after this story, he says, for what it's worth, Emma was watching the debate, and it occurred to her that her friends might think we were talking about her. So she took the time to set the record straight and tweeted, I am not gay. So Kasich embarrassing his daughter at his daughter. First Republican debate.
Look, I if I had a, you know, if my daughter was gay, it would be pretty cool. And some people find that out a little bit later in life.
Emma tweeted out, I'm not gay. I'm not John Kasich's daughter. get this homeless person to stop calling me from payphones.
This is another one. So one of Kasich's big thing on the campaign trail was, of course, his love of food.
Yeah.
And eating food.
He didn't know when he was going to get his next hot meal.
Yeah, there's some really funny footage, Tim, of him on Arthur Avenue during the New York primary. He went to Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, and he went to one of those Italian restaurants, and they just kept bringing him food. And it's just him in this deli, surrounded by media, just like with his head down, just housing pasta fazool. And they bring in like a plate of antipasta, and he's like, "Eh, mangia!"
Really?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
He's not even talking or doing any campaign. This is the first day of the New York primary campaign, and I like to think this was a ruse that politicians sometimes do, is if they're getting asked tough questions at a photo op, just, you know, shove food in your face, like, you know, I can't answer. So, you know, Kasich had to answer for allegations that he's been selling fentanyl.
Yeah.
So this next one comes. It gives you a little bit of flavor about like life on the campaign trail and on the Kasich bus, the Kasich Express. He says, very quickly the bus became a kind of clubhouse for our team, a place to unwind at the end of each long day. And let me tell you, some of those days were long. We'd get going at about 8 o'clock each morning and be running until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Typically, we'd do 2 or 3 town halls each day with a lunch event and media appearances slotted in throughout the day. Most evenings, there'd be a fundraising dinner, too. At night, we'd unwind on the bus with a bottle of wine or two, which for some reason we took to calling Wayne, as in, where's the Wayne?
What?
For the
what?
Life.
Was there a fucking leak on that
it's
bus?
A gas leak on the bus.
I'll give him a pass on that. That's like we're on tour right now, and that's the kind of shit that happens.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't put it in your book. But
I just see how that could happen.
To be fair, we did spend about a 40-minute cab ride just saying the word geo-hell over and over again. So they took to calling Wine Wayne, and he said, for the life of me, I can't tell you how that started. But that became shorthand whenever it was time to kick back and unwind and set aside the events of the day. We ate a lot of Cape Cod potato chips, as I recall. And I
handsomely listened. Paid for this product placement.
So the original draft of this book was like 14 pages, and the editor was like, can you talk about like the food you ate or nicknames you gave stuff or anything?
Governor Kasich, your demographic of Home Depot conversation dads is perfect for the Cape Cod potato chip company. We will pay you handsomely.
Yeah, branded.
Just talk about your experiences in your bizarre stories about children that go nowhere.
Well, he continues. He said, we would snack on the bus, but we wouldn't take our meals there. That was one of our rules of the road, which meant we ate at a lot of local joints. Once, after an impromptu meal at one such restaurant in Iowa, our entire team got sick from something everybody had eaten. Mm. Everybody, that is, except me. I didn't eat anything. Try as I might, I couldn't eat anything. The place we'd wandered into is one of those generic-looking restaurants with every different type of food. And my meal tasted terrible. I thought it was better off going hungry. But when I pushed my plate aside, Doug Priest, this is his campaign manager, had the presence of mind to suggest someone at our table ought to eat it because we didn't want the waiters and kitchen staff thinking we didn't like their food. After all, people knew who we were. There were reporters following us around. We didn't want to put it out there that the food place we ate was lousy. So he had the presence of mind to give someone else food poisoning.
Yeah. he jumped on the grenade there. I love the idea that they're thinking it, in a campaign where Donald Trump is calling his opponents pussies on television. There's going to be a John Kasich doesn't finish his BLT. Yeah.
Well, he couldn't finish it because he had to go outside and carve 3 squiggly lines in the doorframe to warn people.
Yeah. He said, we didn't want to make a big deal of it, but I did mark a hobo hieroglyph on the nearest water tower to let people know bad vittles ahead.
I like how like the there are people on his campaign who have such loyalty to Kasich that they're like, sir, I actually have an allergy to everything in this meal, but I will eat it for you. I will die for you, sir. He's like Stannis Baratheon. You're the only honorable man. And Kasich's just not even listening. He's like, they changed the ice cream truck jingle back in 83, and it's never been the same. It used to be for kids and adults, and now it's not anymore.
I mean, reading that, his annoyance with the menu that has everything on it, I totally get that he's one of those like guys who goes to the diner and is like, what? There's so many. This is too many choices.
At the end of this anecdote about giving his staff food poisoning, in parentheses, he says, I'll usually eat anything, but this one time I was saved by my discerning palate. And then he just transitions and he says, oh, and as long as we're on the subject of food, my wife Karen was in the habit during the campaign of watching what I ate. Literally. Let me explain. She was always good about making sure I put my best foot forward while I was out campaigning. I'd been crisscrossing the country doing all these events, posing for all the pictures, and Karen would be back home in Ohio paying close attention. If she saw something in the press coverage that struck her as off, something I could maybe do a little better or avoid doing altogether, she was all over it. In this context, that she called me up one evening and said, John, I really think you should stop eating all these different foods in front of people.
Kasich was so mad when he learned that the decision points title was taken for his
name. Yeah.
What about my decision not to eat that food?
I can like actually, you know how they're like, oh, a candidate you can see yourself having a beer with? That's stupid. But Like, me and Virgil, we can see ourselves arguing about lunch for 3 hours for Kasich.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and that's why we like him.
Yeah, he definitely wins the lunch primary.
He would come over here. He would ask where the outlet plug is. He would, like, complain about his phone. And then he would just fumble around Grubhub with us for hours.
He would get in an argument with Ernest over a seat.
Yeah. I was once in a car with Virgil and Felix at 3 in the morning, and they had a discussion over whether they needed to call ahead to the nearest 7-Eleven to make sure that they had hot dogs on the rollers ready for them. And I guarantee you that if John Kasich had been in that car too, he would have been an enthusiastic.
He would be like, oh, gee, definitely call ahead. You know, you can never be too careful.
You know, in worst case scenario, you have a conversation with somebody. Yeah. That's like why we were the millennial outreach for Kasich.
All right, one last story from the book. This involves Kasich being at 30 Rock and meeting a celeb in the green room. He goes,
it's a tell-all.
Yeah. I couldn't do the show live because it was blah, blah, blah. Phil Griffin was there in the green room to greet me, along with Chris Matthews, the host of one of the network's flagship programs. He's talking about Hardball, folks. Mm-hmm. And he says, we talked for a bit, and then we were joined by a third person, an unlikely visitor on this scene. I recognize him immediately, Academy Award-winning actor Tom Hanks, who is in the building to promote his latest movie, Sully, in which he plays the title character, Chelsea Sullenberger, the United Airlines pilot, who famously landed a passenger plane on New York's Hudson River.
It's 82 minutes long, produced by Paramount Pictures. just a cut and paste for the Wikipedia plot summary.
By the way, can we talk about that movie for a second? Have you guys seen it? It is hilarious.
I haven't seen it.
It is really funny.
It's so funny because there's nothing to tell.
Five times.
Yeah, and half of the time they're dreams. Yeah. They're nightmare fantasies about if he would have crashed.
Right.
So they're like, we got to pad this out with fantasies and dreams.
Yeah, because it's like, so it starts off with him dream crashing into a plane. And then they show him like actually crashing the plane. And then they like cut to him doing other things. And then he goes back to doing it. And then the final, like, let's see how it really happened. Mm-hmm. Like the big climactic moment is the fucking plane crash, which has already happened four times.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's like the computer simulations that they would. You're in a movie where I watched it at home, but you're watching a movie of computer simulations of planes flying.
It's riveting.
They also made up this whole controversy. Right. Pretty much just slandered. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's because like it's a latter period Eastwood movie, which means it has to have like that like grumpy Fox News grandpa like resentment
towards
like,
authority.
Yeah, exactly.
Towards
these goddamn
bureaucracy.
Yeah, these fucking bureaucrats don't know what it's like to pilot a goddamn plane.
These pencil pushers telling me what I should have done. I like in the post department, they're like, so we got a couple different composers we're looking to do a nice big score for this. Clint's like, no, I'm just gonna play jazz piano over the whole movie. Just set up the screen and mic the piano, and I'll give it one take, and then it'll be your score.
In my United Airlines flight.
It is amazing to doodle around on my keys, my ivories.
The late Eastwood movies are so kind of depressing just because you know he doesn't give a shit at all. But it's like, I got nothing else to do. I'm 90
I like
years
being
old.
On set.
Yeah, it's like all of my family hates me. I like the craft service table.
I was always disappointed because they made that film. Made up some bureaucratic intrigue when the real Sully later went on to testify before Congress about labor rights for pilots.
All these like Clint Eastwood It Really Happened movies, it's like those installations in museums where it's like, you know, find out what it would be like to be on Jupiter. Like 30 minute video of like, you would be 3 foot tall because of the gravity.
I have to say, I do not remember when this happened. Him piling the plane into Mecca. That was weird.
Yeah, that was kind of whoops.
We have a very, very subtle Easter egg joke in the new season of Decker with a Sully 2 poster in the background. and you see the plane, and you see Big Ben in the background.
Here we go again.
The River Thames is in play.
That would be way harder than the Hudson River.
Yeah, that's true. That's
very small margin. Yeah. Very twisty. Yeah.
Oh, how's Sully gonna get out of this?
They challenge Sully. Like, if you can land in the Suez Canal, the British Empire gets it back.
And he's got a stuffy British co-pilot played by Colin Firth.
Yeah. Yeah. This is totally irregular, sir. Yeah. You can't do a thing to do that. No, it's not cricket at all.
Okay, so let me just finish up the Tom Hanks anecdote. And then Cernovich. Definitely Cernovich. Yeah.
Definitely Cernovich.
Oh, God, yeah. We can't.
Okay. Definitely Mike. Cernovich.
Weird Mike.
Five minutes of Cernovich.
So this is a quick one. He just he sees Tom Hanks and he
whose
goes,
credits include
Big
Tears. Big. Yeah. Dragnet, which is actually a good movie.
I shook Tom Hanks's hand and needled him a little. I said, "I understand you don't like Republicans or conservatives very much." He said, "Oh, I like you just fine." Someone suggested we take a picture together as we smiled for the cameras. I turned to Tom Hanks and needled him a little more. I said, "Just do me a favor, will you? Tell them not to put that movie on anymore. Tell them not to put that movie on any more of you on that island talking to the volleyball."
What a fucking dick.
He laughed and said, "Don't be criticizing that movie, Governor. That's how I put my kids through college."
Oh.
That exchange was meaningful to me. Not just because...
I was a huge dick to a celebrity.
Not just because I'd always admired Tom Hanks' work, but because it gave me an opening to mention this chance meeting and my interview with Brian Williams, and to bring up the heroic landing of that airplane on the Hudson River, putting it out there how important I thought it was to celebrate our true American heroes.
I mined that meeting for
Tom
everything
Hanks.
It was worth.
Yeah.
I got some good patter out of it.
He really is. He's like a Cherokee. He uses every part of his weird social interactions. He's like, "I can use the beginning, middle, the hello, the goodbye, the weird dickish thing I say."
Like, look, I know that there's other channels besides TBS, but I don't like turning the channel.
I lost the clicker a while ago, okay? It's TNT or nothing, and I'm sick of the goddamn volleyball.
Stop playing that movie where you talk to the volleyball. That's appropriation of hobo culture.
I immediately corrected him on the improper way he built a fire by the train tracks in that one.
Oh, so yeah, God.
That's Governor John Kasich.
What we could have had.
We could have had this as president.
Could have had that.
Yeah.
Could have had
him as
president.
Whole other side of weird.
He could have, like, I think there's still, we're talking about how easily influenced Trump is. If Trump met Kasich, Trump would be like, "I'm doing a 50-state tour on the rails. Like, I'm going to every diner. I'm going to complain about it. I'm going to have weirdness. I'm going to meet a moose." Like, he's going to do all the Kasich shit.
Well, he'll be a good president when the United States of America dissolves and there's the nation states and he's the president of the Mid-Atlantic Union or something.
Yeah,
he'll like a nice, reasonable
when
five states.
When the biggest percentage of GDP is like recycled cans, he's going to be, he'll be a 15-term president.
King of the North Pole will be his official title. Yeah. Okay. Last but not least, that was Kasich. We picked it up at the beginning of the show, but we would be remiss if Tim joining us not to dip back into Weird Mike. We got to do Weird Mike.
My first experience with Weird Mike was I didn't know too much about him, and this was like late in the election last year, towards the end of the election, but. I don't know how I got into it with him on Twitter, but I wrote something to him. I didn't know too much about him. I didn't know like his tactics or anything, but he wrote me back saying, "I'd be happy to debate you about this issue. You name the time, you name the place." Right. And I swear to God, I didn't know anything about like his tactics. I'm just putting my hand up and promising you this, but I said, "Sure, let's do it. Let's do it for charity." Because he said for charity, right?
Right.
And I said, "My charity is NAMBLA." Now, that is, you laugh. It is obviously a joke, right? It's a comic device saying, "Of course I'm not going to debate
it's not going to
be a debate.
It would be absurd. You wouldn't need a contest to donate to them. You would just do it."
Right. So,
like I do.
So, then he went like, "Oh my God, I just like struck gold. He just played right into my hands. He just admitted he's a pedophile." And like all his followers were like, "This is disgusting. How could you?" I was like, "Oh fuck, I didn't realize like that's his move."
Yeah, because his audience are the dumbest people on earth.
Me and Virgil were talking about
NAFTA was always just like NAFTA. NAMBLA is always just like a punch. It's like
a punchline.
Yeah.
Another spider has entered the spider's web.
I laid the trap.
Me and Virgil were talking about how, like, his move for everyone is just to call them a pedophile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And, like, he should replace Sean Spicer because, like, okay, Sean Spicer gets flustered and Sarah Huckabee get flustered by people being like, you're a fucking idiot. Shut the, like, you're lying to us. But Cernovich logs on every day and just sees thousands of people being like, you're the dumbest fucking idiot who's
ever. The pedophiles are out in
He's like,
today.
The jealous pedophiles are after me again. And it's like, we read this thing he wrote once. It's like, ISIS is a brand, and like every brand, you have to make them look bad. And I'm just going to call them pedophiles. Right. And it ISIS losing territory, it's working.
Yeah,
it was a genius.
Last year, you remember Ben Sasse, right? Before Trump clinched the nomination, they wanted to recruit Ben Sasse to run for president. There were these rumors about it. On Mike Cernovich's blog is a post bragging about how he single-handedly prevented Ben Sasse from running for president because of a tweet he did calling him Pedo Ben Sasse.
It worked.
You don't come back from that. You're done.
It worked.
Well,
it's also very hard to prove that you're not a pedophile.
It's true. It's actually impossible to prove you're not a pedophile.
And the only way you can do it is by live streaming every second of your life. Not having sex with children. And Cernovich can do that, but his enemies can't. And Cernovich
this is me on a playground. Get those hearts going.
I'm being normal right now. Cernovich is Muad'Dib. He is Paul Atreides. He has the word that kills. It's pedophile.
Well, yeah, Tim, you said you didn't know his tactics. You weren't familiar with him.
Because you didn't know about his
mindset. That was
mindset.
Mistake number one.
Yeah.
Mistake number two was not having strong mindset yourself.
Right, my strong gorilla mindset.
Yes. Yeah. Having strong gorilla mindset is the key to winning any battle that you may face in your life. And luckily, Mike wrote a whole book about this.
Do you have a better understanding of his what gorilla mindset? Because it's like...
Okay.
The first instinct is sort of being like, why would you want to have a gorilla? Like, that's a lower evolved brain.
Well, someone pointed out, they said he named his mindset program after the only great ape that can't recognize itself in a mirror.
Okay.
Alone among the great apes, gorillas see a reflection and think it's a different gorilla. Everything else is like, oh, yeah, that's me.
Well, that's interesting because there is a part of the book where he talks about talking to yourself in a mirror. And sort of psyching yourself up.
And punching the strange man in your house.
So he doesn't have a lot of education on what a gorilla is. Like,
no.
He doesn't know much.
You just think it's like a big bad ant.
It's like a hierarchical animal that connotes virility.
Alpha.
That kind of thing.
The logo he has where it's a gorilla and the gorilla has a third eye.
Yeah.
The gorilla has some kind of mystical.
Well, that's the thing, is that the real meat of gorilla mindset is just like self-help garbage. Yeah.
Right.
Well, there's also,
it's just regurgitated.
What was that great? There was that great review of the book where the kid was like, this is incredible. I've done every rule. I've practiced it. It has caused a lot of problems. My family's not talking to me. My girlfriend left me. I lost my job. And really, he was totally sincere. He's like, but this is the first step towards a new life.
Oh my God.
Tim, there's also like this
you must destroy in order to create.
Also, there's kind of parable in the MRA world, some like, pseudoscientific thing about a distinction between bonobo culture and, I guess, gorilla culture.
Well, no, but that's just that it's the bonobos and the chimps. The gorillas have nothing to do with it.
Oh, then I don't know where the gorillas are coming from.
Where are those, the pants? Bonobos?
Bonobos are horny chimps.
Okay.
Basically, they fuck to create structure in their society.
I have too much to keep track of. I don't have to know about the different apes and gorillas and monkeys and stuff.
All right, so we did this on a previous episode, read by Weird Mike himself. So, like as we did before, I swear to God, I'm just gonna like play complete. I'm just gonna just jump to like completely random parts of the book and just listen to it, and we're just. Do two or three of these and just see what Weird Mike has to teach us. So
I am ready,
all right, I am ready. Senpai, teach me. All right, here we go.
Well, of who we spend our time with. Are the people you're spending your time with bringing you closer to your goals? Are they leading to more happiness and fulfillment in your life? Are the activities you engage in bringing you closer to your goals?
No.
A lot of times we're just mindless and we don't think about it and we waste a lot of time or we let people take advantage of us and that has to stop. Because focus has to be ruthless. You have to cut out everything that doesn't bring you closer to your goals.
He sounds like Bruno Kirby in Spinal Tap.
For example, you don't set a goal to die in a car crash.
No,
stop.
air horn. Okay. You don't set a goal to die in a car crash.
If you do that, you'll die in a car crash. Look at me. I'm immune to car crashes.
Yes, if you only orient yourself toward things that don't result in you dying in a car crash, you will never die in a car crash.
All right. This is great.
I'm skipping ahead now.
Oh, man. His brain is so good.
I also run a fan. I get hot at night, so I have a fan blowing on my face at night.
Oh, well, I do that, too.
That makes
everyone does that.
Well. You can also get a humidifier next to your bed, especially when it's very dry out. Right now, I live in a very humid climate, so I don't have that problem.
After I take my clothes out of the washer, I put it in a dryer.
Trash goes in the trash.
In bed. Have you thought about how much money you spend on your bed? Do you have the best quality mattress that you can afford?
Come on down to Sealy's.
I'm not trying to eat a box.
Folks, the capsulemattress.com. They'll send you a fantastic mattress.
Hey, what the fuckers? How's your mindset doing? Before we get in our interview with Barack Obama, I want to ask. So, what are your affirmations, man? Do you set out to die in a car accident?
First audiobook to have commercials built into.
Yeah, but we know for a fact that Cernovich spends 20 hours a day at a desk with a periscope going. That is not fucking rigorous.
I like to imagine a very high-powered fan like blowing on his face as he sleeps.
The Dyson Airblade
is creating new waves in my brain all the time. I sleep in a wind tunnel.
He's got one of those Craftmatic beds, and makes it into a V with his legs and head up.
Whatever you do, do not walk into the Dyson Airblade. That will take you into the mirror dimension.
Make the plan to stick the head in the Dyson Airblade.
Though it may seem tempting, putting your nutsack in the Dyson Airblade. Everyone wants a smooth nutsack, but it is impossible. And accepting that about yourself is the first step towards having a brain that does not wish to die in a hot air balloon accident.
All right, let's do two more selections. Yeah, okay, here we go. This is another, again, completely random.
To play with your own money, play with other people's money, play with house money.
Yeah, man.
That's
when
you make the real big money. So we want to become an investor, not a trader, and I'm going to tell you how to do that.
Oh.
It's real simple. Dollar cost average into low cost index funds.
Oh! The secret is the real
demand. Just means you buy into the market and low cost mutual funds at regular intervals. I'm going to buy at such and such date. For example, I buy low cost funds every 3 months. Like clockwork.
What? That's horrible.
That's the worst advice I've ever heard. When you want to invest in shares, you can't go wrong with the stock market.
But when it comes to stocks, don't forget about supply and demand.
You gotta buy stocks if you want to get in the stock market. Yeah.
It's like, why would you want to make a little bit of money in the stock market when you can make a lot of money in the stock market?
The big problem people run into is they buy things high and then they sell them either high or, in the worst case, low. You will lose money if you do this.
All right, this one is from the beginning of the book.
There are days I still feel like the fat kid who was afraid to walk home from school. But here I am, successes, failures, and flaws, and all their shame and all their glory.
Hell yeah.
So maybe you'll find the answer to what you're looking for. But I'm going to ask you, isn't it time for you to get serious? If you want to change your mindset, you have to know what is mindset. Mindset is a set of assumptions, methods, or beliefs that you live by, and what other people live by, and that it modifies your behavior and changes your behavior. In other words, if you have certain mindset beliefs, you're going to behave according to those beliefs.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine a computer. So true. Monitor, keyboard, and processor are all the hardware. Without any software to run it, your computer would be worthless. Your body is your hardware, and your mindset is your operating system.
No. Jesus Christ.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Once again, mindset, Mike is just describing having thoughts.
Having a fucking brain. Yeah.
Having a fucking
it's
brain.
It's having higher consciousness.
Yeah. Some people go about their lives regularly. Me? Me? I have a organ evacuation period.
And I make the active decision to get rid of the waste that's in my body that is not being used productively, because we have to operate at 100% if we're going to achieve greatness. And we can't do that if we have a bunch of brown fecal matter sitting in our lower intestine.
I know that if I don't momentarily close my eyes every few seconds, my eyes are going to dry out.
I've total body awareness. I can feel every muscle in my rectal area, and I command it to push the fecal matter down and not up. If you do up, it's just going to go up to your stomach, and it's going to cause a lot of problems for your posture.
Yeah, and I keep it closed when I'm not, you know, I'm sitting on a toilet, because if I opened it up randomly at any point of the day, I'd be stating my pants.
The biggest thing you're going to want to look out for while you are trying to achieve your goals in business and relationships is for your heart to continually pump blood through your body. If you do not do this, your brain is going to stop working, you will stop breathing, and you will cease to be alive. And it is very hard to accomplish your goals as a dead person. People have done it, but it's not the best, it is not the optimum position to
try. But the thing that takes the most amount of work and most amount of mental focus and concentration is when I see like a 6 or 7 year old boy walking around the street, I have to remind myself he is not to be fucked. He is off limits. He is off limits. I have to keep telling myself that. Fuck you, Mike.
Yeah, go fuck yourself for a bit.
Fuck you forever and ever. I want to be an 80-year-old man sending out the message, fuck you, weird Mike. You're never getting away with what you did to Vic Berger.
Yeah,
piece
go
of
fuck
shit.
Yourself.
I think that's a,
yeah, that's
a good
place
to end it.
Great way to end.
Yeah. Tim Heidecker,
oh, this is a blast.
Thanks so much for
Thank
joining
you
us,
so
man.
Much.
This is
awesome.
Until next time, guys. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
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 Mindset.